Hello.
And welcome to Questy Besties, our podcast all about Mythic Quest, the epic TV show that launched an even epicker friendship. I'm Charlotte Nickdow.
I'm Jessie Ennis.
I'm Ashley Birch.
Imani Hakim.
And I'm David Hornsby, their boss and friend.
On today's episode, we're discussing episode 7, Permadeath, written by
Aparna Nancharla.
And
me, Ashley Birch.
The episode is directed by Todd Bierman. In this episode, Ian challenges the hacker to an in-game showdown. David tries to stave off Montreal while Wild D draws in more fans.
Wild D.
It's time for Questy Besties to watch Mythic Quest and talk to guesties. They're four girls.
Women.
Who met on a show and now they're Questy Besties.
And me.
And David Hornsby.
Today we have our Questy Bestie guestie, who is one of my favorite writers and people, John Howell Harris.
Yay!
John, welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
So John has the auspicious distinction. Wow.
Distinction
of being consistently hired over and over again for the show when he thought he was done.
Yes.
How many times did that happen?
At least 4 or 5, yeah, during production.
So talk us through how this works. You do weeks in the writer's room and then you think you're done?
Yes. And then I went to Australia for Christmas with my wife's Australian.
What'd you think?
I loved it. That was my first time there.
Correct.
All the trash cans said Hornsby on them.
Because you were in Hornsby.
Yeah, Hornsby. So
nice. Fancy.
I got a chuckle out of that.
I definitely got a picture sent to me.
Yep, so I sent him a picture. It's like, look at these trash cans. They say Hornsby.
So you were in Australia.
In Australia, I came back and they were shooting the episode I wrote.
Which was Convention, right?
Yeah.
Episode four.
Yeah. I wanted to just hang out on set for the week just to see it getting shot. And then on Wednesday, Rob said, you're hired again. So I got rehired because there was just not enough scripts to shoot. As I remember.
That happened.
Sort of a math problem.
And then it was also because there was like this Rob and David were arguing over the Craig Mazin's character. Lou, and Rob was like, John agrees with me, so he's come with me to just write what I say.
I remember that. Yeah. That was at the convention center where we just ended up writing in so many weird rooms and like on location.
So you guys were basically filming episode 4 and writing episode 6.
Yes, because 5 was the standalone.
Yeah, we were re-breaking maybe, and then I remember Rob pulling you in to be like, John will write what I say. Come on, let's go, John.
So I was puppeted. Which is fine. That was the whole experience, just being puppeted.
John is like one of our funniest writers for sure, and proved himself indispensable when we were going through the very chaotic season 1. We were ambitious, but had our hopes. We're like, well, we'll be fine. Yeah, we can finish up the rest. And it's like, no, we need him back.
We need John.
And we would be dividing, and John and I might be up in the room while Megan and Rob are down, or vice versa, but Megan and John and. So he was our utility, down on set, and he was definitely our utility player to help us like see it through, and brought so many great jokes and ideas to these, especially these final episodes where it was just kind of the three of us and four of us sometimes with Rob, depending on when he could work.
Yeah, I remember it was like me, you, and Megan a lot of times just like Frankensteining scripts together and like
taking scenes.
I think we were shooting this episode because I remember there's like someone sent a photo of me on the floor of the mocap studio, like in between setups, just like feverishly writing an episode, but sitting in the, I don't know why I was like sitting on the floor with no chair in the middle of the room, like.
With your legs spread like you were in kindergarten kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So we always like to ask every Questy Bestie guesties how they came to become involved with Mythic Quest. But we don't want to ask you, so.
Oh, that's fine.
We do, please, tell us the story.
I worked on the MIC, which had a lot of people from It's Always Sunny, like the true creators, the Chernin brothers, were on Sunny for years and years and years. And then, so I worked on the MIC and that got canceled.
Which was a shame because it was such a good show.
I agree. And Rob, I had like met on this other show and he was like, hey, that other show sucks. Like, we're doing this show and like, here's a script. Do you want to do it? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And I met him very briefly because Caitlin obviously was on the MIC, but I had never really met Rob before. And then, So just through that kind of email exchange, and I was like, yeah, absolutely. And it's very boring. It's very dull.
But you've known Megan forever.
I've known Megan forever, yeah, which is initially how I got in, because there was like this weird season of Sunny, which is how I eventually got on the mic, was through that, even though I basically didn't meet anybody involved. I just kept getting emails, which is great.
That is great. So you and Megan worked together at The Onion.
We did, yeah. We worked at The Onion in 2006 through 9 or something like that. And then Megan moved out here and became very successful in TV. And then she had this animated project very briefly, which we were talking. And then I think through that connection, she started on Sunny and she hired me for Sunny, which again was sight unseen. I was in New York and you know what? This is it. I'm making it sound like I'm just like I'm very lucky.
No, but we're also really lucky because I think you're a very vital element to the writing staff of the show.
Oh, we've talked about you so much on previous episodes.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were a big get for this podcast.
I got a text again. Text. And I didn't ask any, I never ask questions either. That's the other thing. I get a text, I just say yes immediately. I didn't even know who was going to be here.
The night before, right? It was yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Ashley was like, excited to see you tomorrow. I was like, I didn't even know you're fucking be here. I just said yes.
Your wife was like, where are you walking out of the door to? Oh, I'm going to a podcast. They told me to show up, so I'm going to show up.
We have a baby. You have to tell me things. I talked in one of the previous episodes about how nervous I was in the writer's room. And I was so comforted by you because, well, A, you're just one of the funniest people I know. So you're making me laugh constantly, which was just making me less anxious because I was laughing. But then also, you were really supportive. I warned you that this would be it.
I know.
I'm going to give you a lot of compliments.
It's been a fucking year of just garbage. I'm just going to let this like wash over me.
Hornsby garbage, would you say? The Hornsby trash cans?
Oh, God, man, this is going to be a long 90 minutes.
You're talking about supporting. I felt like I was roasted by this guy. But everyone else, go ahead.
Got to have a common enemy, I think.
Right? Sure.
I would be nervous of contributing sometimes, and I would, like, say an idea sometimes, and it would kind of just pass along as it does. And I remember a few times you were like, well, Ashley actually had a good idea. And I remember, you know, you have those days when you come home from a writer's room and you're like, God, I'm such trash. But I'd always tell Mort, my partner, like, but John did this really nice thing where he like pointed out an idea I had. And it was so nice because I was just really nervous and I wanted to do a good job. And it was so helpful to me, especially because I really respect you as a writer. So whenever you
That's really nice.
Pointed that out, it was really, really helpful to me.
Well, that's the reaction to me to things I didn't like being in rooms. Like, it means the world to people. I think if you correctly attribute their ideas to them, it's happened to me so many times. And it's a dumb, really petty ego thing to get pissed off. But like, your idea will get attributed to someone else. And you're like, you can't be like, no, that was mine. My idea? Because then you're like a psychopath. So you just have to like.
With a gold pen.
With a gold pen. It's like, no, see, it's in my little book. First season of Mythic Quest, we're like, you know, however many months into it, I'm like, well, I'm getting fired. Like, this is going horribly.
We talked in our first episode of the podcast about all of us having that experience of assuming we were going to get fired.
But yeah, I remember us having that conversation. I was so, I was like, really? You're afraid of that? Because I was just like, you're so fun. I'm going to get fired. Everyone had that feeling, I think.
I'm still afraid of that. Isn't everybody like afraid of that?
We're on hiatus.
Yeah, we are. But I mean, it's like, but everybody here can agree that we're all frauds and we don't deserve
any of this, right? We don't deserve anything good.
No, nothing good should happen. And
you look directly at me for that. Well, but that first season of a show is really hard. And yeah, especially if you're referencing the first few months or however long it took, where we were obviously finding like, what stories are we going to tell on this show? And also following the Sunny model, where a lot of times we break up in the room, you know, very quickly we're breaking up to different rooms and we're breaking different stories and seeing what has traction and what doesn't. And certainly we found our voice during that process, but a lot of the season ended up getting written too. And it feels like the later half where we were finding things in production and you're like, oh, okay, so this plays or this story needs to be simpler or whatever it was, or, oh, we don't have a script for that.
Yeah.
What was your favorite headline you wrote for The Onion?
Man who likes to move it, still searching for perfect song. I think was my, and that was just like a one-liner. Okay. I'm sorry. I know. It's like, no one's going to like this. But it was like, my favorite headline I wrote was, only in New York says man being mugged at by Stanley Tucci on top of Empire State Building. That was my favorite. That was my favorite Onion headline.
I like that headline.
All right, so we're discussing permadeath today. What do you remember from shooting this episode?
I remember
writing another episode. Yeah, probably.
That was like basically
sitting
yeah,
on the mocap
like,
studio.
Yeah,
floor.
I was on set every day, but I was like purely there to write wherever I was like out of frame.
And then the second half of the season was just all a blur because the first half was pretty smooth sailing, and then second half we were, you know, like you guys said, re-breaking the season, so it's sort of hard for me to even pinpoint memories.
And yeah, we were all starting to get sick. We should do
definitely
we
Ill.
Should do a strong shout out to Ashley Birch's pink eye for this episode.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah, because Ashley was out a couple days and they got a body double, which was deeply creepy.
It was
very
unsettling. Yeah.
I woke up at like 6 a.m. the day that we were supposed to shoot. We were the first scenes up with pink eye. All the scenes that I'm in were pickups, and then the one scene of me and Craig where Lou is dripping mustard on my laptop was composited.
Is that what that was? It was mustard? I couldn't tell what that was. All right.
It should have been ketchup probably in
retrospect.
Yeah,
it looked like some loogie done in the
You know, you make the call the day of. Yeah. You don't know how it's going to turn out. Ketchup or mustard, the prop guy says, you choose one. Sometimes you choose wrong.
I'm telling you, mustard doesn't look like mustard on camera. You too, your funeral.
He walked away, yeah. All right.
Your funeral.
All right. Cream he says
cheese,
mustard.
Cream cheese looks like mustard on camera.
But I remember you felt so bad,
I
Ashley.
Felt so guilty.
And we kept being like, you didn't try to get pink eye. We all know you didn't hope that you would throw a wrench in this week's plan. And it was honestly a really good learning moment for me because I realized things can always be reorganized.
Yeah.
You can reschedule stuff. You can shoot around stuff.
From our perspective anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know,
everybody's
it's not
dispensable. No one matters.
We'll have a doppelganger for you in less than 2 hours.
Like my doppelganger we talked about literally was like on our set without even asking. Like, there's a man that looks just like you, like creeping around.
Feels like
in
a
the
threat.
Background.
Yeah. Well, he was, let's say this. First of all, he was younger.
Yes.
And then eventually he was more ripped.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I was saying over the pandemic, he'd clearly been doing sit-ups or push-ups. And I was like, did you work out over the pandemic? He's like, I did like 100 push-ups a day. I was like, cool.
All right.
We need to have him removed.
But you asked for him. Yeah, I know what I said.
You brought him.
But usually there's this real pressure on actors, at least that I've felt, that's like if you drop the ball, then everyone else's job is going to be affected by that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I've been fully told off for that before.
Yeah, and Charlotte and I both showed up with like severe colds because we could push through it and we were actors and we weren't going to make anyone reschedule anything. And Ashley having that experience of not being able to push through it because her eye was sealed shut. It was just a really great learning moment for me of like, oh, right. Even if it's really bad, they're still going to be able to work it out.
Yeah. And we learned that doubly this season.
This episode, we get into The Masked Man, which is
that was really good. Yeah.
It's my in. You know, sometimes you need like words to help you get into an accent. And for me, it's Masked Man. Because masked in any, man. I mean, maybe not any, but in my language accent, in my accent, it's just masked man, which is the same A sound, but I find it very strange and interesting that you say the masked man.
Yes, somebody, maybe you pointed that out to me when we were shooting this episode, and I was like, well, it's because, and then literally couldn't figure out why, and it triggered an existential crisis.
good.
But I say it's because of the ask list, right?
It's because of the what's a what?
Yeah, sorry.
The ask list, which is like the pronunciation of words, because literally mask, obviously the word ask is in that.
Uh-huh.
So you go mask, but then man, you're back to your
there's no
your
S-K
a.
at the end? That's why?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why it's the ask list. There's some words that fall under that category.
Oh, John is burning to say something.
Go ahead.
Looked over John.
Thank you, Juilliard.
Actually, that's quite a compliment because I did not go to Juilliard, so I appreciate that.
Carnegie
Mellon
is
very
fancy.
Burn to you. The things I like about, personally, this episode, having seen it again, is we get to see Poppy really uncorked and having a great time.
Uncorked is a great way to describe it.
Poppy Uncorked would be a good name for the podcast.
We're changing the name of the podcast. Yeah, this was such a fun episode to shoot. I feel like I've already mentioned before that there's a moment in this script where Ashley, you or Aparna had written, Poppy does a weird little dance.
That was me.
Yeah.
Because I know you do little weird little dances.
And I remember reading that and being like, aha, now this I've got. And also it was in that mocap scene. And I'm sure you meant like, for this moment, Poppy will do a weird little dance. And I was like, ah. So they want me to dance for the whole scene. And it was so hot in that mocap suit. And at one point I was like sweating and I stank. And I was like, oh my God, this scene's really taking it out of me. And Rob was like, you don't need to be dancing the whole time. No one's asked. You've made that choice. Like, and now you have to stick to it. But I just want to say you did this.
I will say I love it so much, though, because people will be having full conversations and you're just in the background dancing by, dancing in the foreground. It's such a funny little bit that you're in your own world just having a nice time. It's funny, too, because this episode, I don't know if this is intentional. Maybe, David, you can tell me. But now both episodes that I have either co-written or written for the show have involved fights.
Oh,
I'm right. The fight gal of the writer's room. This one and then Everlight has a fight in it.
I think because this one, it was more video game focused. Yeah. And I think Everlight, too, felt like,
nerdy.
Oh,
you're a nerd. You're a nerd. You're a dork. Yeah.
Give it to, that, I, give it to the fucking dork.
How do I say this? I mean, it's her, Humphrey, right? Yeah.
Sure. I don't know. Which dork should write this one?
We got like a dork dice and let me roll them.
Yeah, they're called 12-sided dice.
I do really like it, though, because I have a lot of fun figuring out fight pacing, which is kind of weird to do in a script, but it's fun to kind of find moments where, like, I think bringing back Fire Rain was a later addition to when Aparna and I were writing it.
And Fireball, too.
Yeah, Fire Rain meets Fireball.
I like fire. I like fights. I'm a simple gal. I like simple things. But it's cool to, like, pace it out and, like, find the tension in the fight scene. And I feel like everyone's so good in this episode, too. So it's really fun. Mm. And seeing the dynamic between Ian and Poppy, I just love it so much. Like, you teaching him how to play the game, that whole montage. Yes, it's
that
really
montage,
satisfying.
We shot that. It was one of the very, very few days that we went late because we pretty much never do on this show, right? Mm. And I remember it just felt so fun to shoot that montage. Like, we were kind of making stuff up as we went. And I remember, like, at one point, the production had ordered pizza for the crew. And I was, like, shoveling pizza down as I want to do. And I remember Rob seeing me across the room and, like, pointing at me in this accusatory way and being like, stop eating that. And I was like, I'm sorry. And he was like, no, I mean, pause eating that. Let's go shoot you eating that piece of pizza. And I was like, oh, okay. He, like, went and shot us, like, playing the game and me eating the pizza. Thought I was, like, in so much trouble for eating the pizza.
No, it's just that your normal behavior was so gross.
We gotta get this on camera.
It's like when you eating a lot of candy, and like we noticed you were just eating candy off camera. Like you know, she's got a lot of candy eating in the scene. She shouldn't do that. By the end of the scene, which was also late at night, right? That
I
scene, the second
so
season,
silly.
You were just like delusional.
I don't have good self-control with food. And so once you've given it, firstly, I don't like doing the spit bucket thing, which is like actors, like if you're sensible, you have a bucket that you, when you eat a bite of food, then you spit it out so you don't have to just eat a bunch of food. And I'm like, but it's free food. Yeah. Why would I spit it out?
But I do really like this montage because it does tell that story visually of you guys bonding. And I do love where it gets to at the end of the episode where, you know, yes, you're uncorked, but then by the end, you really obviously regret your choice. And I like about the show that we can have that emotional thread and we have that whole storyline throughout the season of you feeling fed up, but then having these torn and conflicted feelings, which is, I think, a really nice ending for this episode.
Plus, it's like literally the classic Rocky montage.
It's a fight training montage, but all we're doing is sitting and looking at a screen and holding controllers. So we had to like come up with fun ways to show that we were playing a game where you don't have to move.
It's fun for me as a person that loves games too to show how it can be tense, because I remember when esports started happening, people were like, I don't fucking get it. You watch people play a video game like you watch a football game, but it's the exact same principles. It's a competition. There are rules.
People have skills.
People have skills. And if you're invested, it's just interesting.
That stuff too, in particular, is people are way more invested because it's like,
yeah,
if I go to a basketball game, I don't play basketball every day.
Right.
Like people who go to those esports tournaments, they play that game, like I'm going to say a huge proportion of them play that same game like every day and probably in some cases are almost as good.
That's a really good point.
Playing it. So you're so much more.
You understand it.
Yeah. And you're so much. It'd be like if in a pro basketball game, like everybody in the audience was in like the G League, like the league below. And then you're just like being watched by people who are like almost as good at basketball players as you are.
That's such a good point. I never thought about that. But yeah, there is like a level of literacy with what people are doing and their tactics and stuff that just makes people go fucking wild.
Well, as I was watching a bunch of League of Legends stuff, I don't want to get into why, but like. But it's crazy, the announcers, because we're like, what is happening? And then something happens and they're like, oh my God, they're losing their minds. I'm like, nothing changed. It's the same thing. Like, why are they screaming? They're like, you just, it's very confusing.
Speaking of that, we have a really strong Wild D storyline this episode.
Yes. Yeah.
We kind of get to see Wild D at her peak. And
Wild D.
And
who did the voice for that? Was that like a
VO? I don't know.
VO? It's two post PAs that we turn to a lot if we need a voice or even music written, because one of them writes music and we'll just ask them to like, here, say this.
But back to Wild D.
Wild D.
I love
why
watching.
Is it so sensual?
I don't know, but it Wild is in the D. show, right?
Yeah.
I like it.
Brad, I think because Brad was behind it and he's it's gotta be sensual. Right.
He's trying to make it a sex pot.
Oh, that's right, with the lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
We get to kind of go along this budding romance that's happening, and we see Rachel start to really root for Dana and try to guide her and support her, and she's like, you don't need to wear this stupid lipstick, and why aren't you wearing your glasses? And I really love that scene.
It's kind of controlling, actually.
I really like the fighting tournament that Dana gets to narrate it all.
You do such a good job.
It's so fun.
Yeah,
you make that scene.
Thank you. But it was really, I remember on the day getting all of those lines and just being like, oh shit.
Oh yeah, you got some of those lines like really last
night. Yeah, in the morning I was like, ah! but it came together so nicely and I really liked it.
It really works really well.
Steve edited this episode and did a great job. It had a lot of montage stuff. It had a lot of stuff in post where you really had to construct it. You know, it's in the script, but we're filming B-roll of them throwing controllers and stuff like that. And you have to kind of make it interesting and compelling. And he even pitched some great ads between Ian and the masked man where he's like, why aren't you taking your clothes off? And he's like, I don't want to do that. And like all that back and forth was just him constructing stuff. So it just furthers the construction of it in post. Some of that stuff really comes together.
I love the dynamic we get to see more of in this episode between David and Sue, which is something that we follow over the course of the next season too. And that whole scene is really great. I love when she's trying to calm you down and she's like, well, I just called my sister Jackie. I don't have a sister Jackie. I had a very lonely existence.
Well, that scene actually had Humphrey in it too. Tall Paul comes in, I think at the end there, and he's like, fancy a cup. And you know, he's like asking if we want tea. And I'm like, shut the fuck up, Paul. And I think I run past him. But
it's so fun for me to think about Tall Paul and Sue being trapped in the basement, but you can come and go as you please.
I kind of want to backtrack a little bit and talk about that opening scene with David, Ian, and Poppy in the pivot. It's so funny. It's so good.
Also, you guys coughing in that scene. That happened because, well, firstly.
How did that play for everyone
it's,
now?
Yeah, it's exactly. Triggering now.
Very different.
On the day when we shot that wasn't written into the scene, and it wasn't even, for as far as I understand, like improvised. You, David, just started coughing. The way that I remember it is that we were doing the scene. I was doing my line and you were really trying to hold in a cough, and I could see you like holding your lips together and you going and then Rob started coughing with you to cut me off, and like it basically played out pretty naturally, like exactly
the way
that you see it. Did you remember it as that you actually were doing a joke?
I thought I was doing a joke. We were in Rob mode of like, let's keep it moving, and so I was like, he probably doesn't want to do that. And then I think he initiated it in the later take. I'm like, he is game for it. And so we just started doing it. But
yes, that's right. We did a take that was like supposed to be that, but it happened because the first time it was just you coughing and you were apologizing at the same time.
Funny. Yeah, which is now wouldn't, you know, this idea that like, you're so brave. You came to work and you were sick and like, way to push through it. It's like, no, you're spreading virus and get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, stay home.
Was that, were you patient zero for then everyone being sick by episode 9? That cough, we caught it on camera.
Is this a gotcha podcast?
I've got a Jesse's Justy for this episode. This is the scene between Poppy and Brad when they decide to wage a bet about the game. And he says, not money, hair. And she's like, you want my hair? He's like, it's not for me. All of that makes me laugh so hard. I love that dynamic. And then it comes back in season two. He wants more hair.
He always wants hair. That wasn't in the scene. And if I remember correctly, I think we were talking to you, Megan, and you said something about like, oh, David pitched this really weird joke where Brad wants Poppy's hair. And we were like, that's so out there. Like, we can't do that. And Danny and I were like, I want to do that joke. Let's shoot that joke. We were like, we love this hair joke.
It's a window into Brad that doesn't really answer any questions. It just asks more questions.
But so also is exactly it. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, you buy that 100%.
I also love how disappointed he looks when you say no. Like, disappointed in you. Not disappointed that you won't get, like, come that, like, on. God, you're so
just
basic.
Give me the hair. Yeah.
It's really great.
The other thing in this fight scene that we build to, which was something in post, was Ian's penis. So let's talk about Ian's penis.
Oh, yeah. Can we finally talk about Ian's penis?
I think Megan pitched it, but this idea of the vanilla version was a great story step for this to kind of add a turn within the fight. Initially, what we had them animate was a very small penis for Ian.
And then there's Poppy, like, had made the model. That, yeah, Poppy had made the model, and Ian's like, why'd you do this? And she's like, I just kind of had a hunch you were going to take your clothes off.
I think you're like, yeah, like, that one was for me. You know what I mean? It was like, that one's for me. And so we had that, and it was really funny. And we ultimately ended up pulling back on that because it seemed almost funnier to have the butt shot and just let people's imaginations wander.
Red Storm had to model it, though. So there is a tiny Ian dick floating around somewhere on their servers, like a full model.
That's been hacked. That's somewhere.
We also see the return of Byron.
Byron.
Who must be in a prison library? Maybe. No, he's just got an ankle monitor, so he could have been in a normal library.
Yeah. Anybody who uses the internet on the library computers is...
Yeah, what's he doing?
Before he started watching the stream?
We know what he's doing.
The big thing that we build toward in this episode is finding out who the masked man is, who ends up being Pootie Shoe.
Yes.
And I remember in the writer's room, we were really worried. We were like, is everyone going to see this coming? Like, did we do enough, like... red herrings or just sort of throwing people off the scent to surprise people. And everyone that we talked to, no one guessed it. No one assumed it was going to be Pootie.
I think that was our reaction because that was decided on in like week two of the room. And it was like everybody lived with it for like 4 months. And so it seemed so obvious.
Yeah.
Because it was just like one of the first few things that was decided in like the beginning that stuck all
and
the
like
way
locked
through.
In.
Yeah.
I noticed in this episode too, this is maybe the first time we had Ian say, I don't do fill in the blank. And he said, I don't do phones.
Oh yeah.
Which he doesn't do phones, David.
Becomes a character line for him. You know, it's just like, I don't do emotion.
I don't do calendars.
I don't do calendars. Uh-huh. This is, I think, the episode where that started.
That first starts.
We go to every now and then. It's fun.
I want to quickly shout out my wife on that scene because she came up with Sex Pest.
Yes.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Because we had to right.
My wife, Neha, we had to text her. We're like, what's a good Australian insult?
John also, whenever we would read scripts out loud, we would often cast John to be Poppy because he has an Australian accent.
I just do the thickest, like, Crocodile Dundee.
Go on.
Yeah, like it, but
go
also
on.
Apparently, well,
come on.
Well, what's a Poppy line? Like,
he doesn't do phones, David.
He doesn't do phones, David.
I love how that's your neck uncanny. Like poked out as you said it.
It was really rough. Like, he doesn't. And then I'd have to sustain it for 25 minutes while we're reading a script, which is my own trap.
Speaking of Australianisms, in this episode, I say the word assumes, and I'd like to address it.
We were waiting for you to do so.
Thank you. I brought you all here today to talk about this word because you wrote that into the episode because you thought my Australian accent was funny. I say assumes the hero he assumes himself to be. You put it in because you were like, that's so funny how the Australian accent. And then
for some reason, after we shot it, I was talking to some Australian friends about like, ah, it's so funny. Like we say assumes and Americans say assumes. And they were like, we don't say assumes. That, no one says it like that. And so then I did like a poll where I was like asking every Australian that I knew and I was the only person that said it like that.
Oh, dear.
I had to like come back into work with my tail between my legs like, guys, I think we gotta do some ADR on this because no one else did. I don't know why it's like this. And then I found out later that it's because my Filipino dad, it's like a weird Filipino-Australian hybrid. And I actually regret recording over it. I wish we had have kept it as assumes.
David and I were supposed to play drunk in this episode. And I remember reading that and immediately being like, nope, nope. Can't do that. Not going to play drunk. Joe has a very high tolerance and she will not be drunk.
That's like the choice. Hardest thing to do, right?
That's a
like
smart. Well, as you see by my performance, yes. I mean, I think the camera guy was like, yeah, like pulling his eye back from the lens like, whoa. All right, guys, I think we need to back up a little bit. How big is this closet? Can we get the set guy? We got handyman like expanding the closet. Can we get another shelf?
A lot of space work.
Yeah.
I also remember when we were shooting that scene, David had come up with all these ways to make the puke as realistic as possible. We had like a oatmeal mush that you would stick to your face.
Why are you making that gross face, David? Like it's the first time
I'm
you're
living in her
it.
Story. I'm so present. And like, I think that's, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you and Thea, our makeup artist, had figured out how to apply this oatmeal to your lips to make it seem as though you had just puked. And you had communicated with Todd Bierman, our director, that you really wanted to make sure you got a shot of you actually vomiting. And we shot the scene and they're like, great, moving on. And you were like, moving on to me puking. And they're like, nope, we got it, you're good, you bend out of frame, we don't need it. And I remember it was the most serious I've ever seen you were like, we're not gonna shoot me puking. Yeah. I've been waiting all day to puke.
A lot of people don't know when I'm joking and when I'm mad, and usually I don't either. Is the terrible. But I was pissed at Todd that day for that in that moment. But I love Todd, and he's an amazing director, and he does.
Here we go, Hollywood Hornsby.
He does. he has an awesome episode in second season, which I'm excited for people to see. But I was like, Todd, what the fuck, man? Like, we were supposed to do puke. And he's like, no one's going to see the puke. And I'm like, I don't care if no one wants to see it. I want to see it in the editing room.
It's
what
real.
Are we doing?
It's raw.
And Todd is such a director who just keeps the train moving.
Yeah.
You know, he's really good about it.
He's like, fine. He's switches off all the cameras.
Yeah, the crew is always thrilled when it's a Todd episode because they're like, great, we're just going to do what's on the page, shoot it the way that it's supposed to be done, and we'll go home at a reasonable hour.
Yes.
I don't want to belabor this, but it's a weird hill to die on.
Puking on camera? How often do you get to puke on camera?
But why is that a dream of yours?
Because he's an actor.
That didn't say it was a dream of mine. I'm saying that I
clearly wanted... was a dream of yours. You made
a dream. What a dream is like? You mean like a sleep dream?
You brought
dream
the production to a standstill.
Listen, we had oatmeal prepared. You're not going to honor the oatmeal preparation? Hours went into this. Discussions. I had text messages.
Oh,
I have threads.
Puking on camera
wins Emmys. Yeah. That's
if only we had had that. Maybe we'd all have a trophy now.
Yeah, it separates the award winners from the not award winners. You know. You think Maisel didn't have puke? Maisel had puke.
Maisel wall to wall puke.
Maisel as a puke fest season one. Oh my God! I mean, you're sloshing around in half those scenes.
It's like that scene in Life of Brian. There's just jets of puke.
Let me ask you a question, John. How does it feel to be a story hog?
Oh man, I am a story hog.
Ooh.
Oh, I'm right. There's a lot of there's a lot of dipshit trash rats here.
Oh yeah, you're surrounded. Yeah.
What does being a story hog mean to you?
That's true.
Well, I came up with the name David Hornsby Story Hog, so I'm very proud of that. And I still have the shirt. I wear it hiking. As I'm sure many
are
people
are you really proud because you're not wearing the shirt right now?
I actually totally forgot about it until this very moment.
You wear it when cleaning up puke?
Yeah, when cleaning up
in my honor. It's the only time he's not embarrassed to wear it.
Actually, the Story Hog shirts came out great. Nice cream color.
Yeah, and that's great logo. We owe that to Jesse.
Yes,
Thank you.
Made the t-shirts. I'm very proud to be a Story Hog. We root out stories like so many priceless truffles.
I feel like whenever y'all would come out of your room, John was always the one starting the snorting.
Yeah.
He would start that.
Well, I like to stir it up the shit pot between the story hogs and the dipshit trash rats.
It's true. It's
although
true.
Humphrey came up with dipshit trash rats, which is the biggest shit stir of all.
He's the only one that really could have named the Megan Gans room Megan Gans dipshit trash rats and gotten away with it, I think.
I want to give Humphrey credit on something really fast. The Rutger Hauer was his.
Oh,
he named
yes,
the Rutger
yeah.
Hauer. And I'm almost certain that Bitter Hemlock of Betrayal
definitely.
Was his. That's the most Humphrey line
I definitely
ever
wrote
read.
That down literally as a quote that we should attribute Humphrey. So that one, that just sticks out of that
oh,
episode.
Yeah.
Like if you know Humphrey, you're like, oh, that's Humphrey.
That's
right
a
there.
Humphrey line.
Did you guys 100%. See, came up with all the titles of CW's books too that are in the background of the shots?
Yeah. Like, oh, he did?
Yeah, Humphrey did. Yeah.
Oh.
Like Caves of Anoran and like, I can't remember.
It makes so much sense.
Caves of...
Benaroth?
Caves of Benaroth.
And Tears of...
Tears of the Anoran.
It just flows from his poison tongue.
Yes. There's no colon rest of the title this season, right? It's
yeah.
There's
yeah.
no Titan's Rift?
Yeah, there's no Titan's Rift. So oh, we started okay. with season one with Raven's Banquet, and then we were going to do Titan's Rift and decided, you know what? Let's just do Mythic Quest and see how that goes.
It's all anybody calls it anyway.
But yeah. I'd be interested
People
in a poll
like the show
about
when it's no longer called Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet.
But I'd be interested, like, do people like the show? Because video games obviously have these subtitles, right?
I liked it. I thought it would be cool, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, I was bringing it up because we had a day where we're like, oh, what are we going to call the season? And, like, we came up with all these names, and like this is when Humphrey was like too deep in that knowledge. He was like came up with these like wild ones, and then Katie McElhaney was like Titan's Rift. I was like, that's perfect, and I circled that one. And Humphrey's like, what about? You know, like,
that was a good Humphrey.
It's like, look, you do know the most, but this is not. you need to know slightly less in this instance.
I believe the time has come.
It has come.
For the Questy
Bestie Guesty Testy.
I had been prepared for this.
John Harris, you're in the hot seat. Our first question comes from Charlotte Nickdow.
What's your Questy?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just want to be a dad and have my family and be happy and I don't know.
That's a great Questy.
Yeah. Could you tell us one of your favorite Isha stories? Isha is his daughter.
One day she was like, she just told me. Nobody asked her. She just told me. She said, I'm the weasel. And I said, what? And she goes, I'm the weasel. And I died laughing. And she got fucking furious and like full on tantrum. She's like, no, it's not funny. Like, you know, and I was like, so I was like, all right. Cause I mean, immediately what popped to mind was Pauly Shore. For me, I was like, Pauly Shore, like the weasel. So I mean that yeah, and then but I think it was because she had been listening to the song Pop Goes the Weasel.
Aww.
And she wanted to like chase me around the mulberry bush and she's like, I'm the weasel. So I think that's what it came from, but we didn't get that far because I laughed and like she lost her mind.
And then she changed her name again, didn't she?
To John Harris.
Oh, she did say, I'm John Harris, which was like really deeply upsetting. She's like, I'm John Harris. I'm like, who am I? You know, just like, well, I'm John Harris. Like, it's like, you're two. This is really just like a deep existential crisis.
So I want to give you one more opportunity. What's your Questy?
I think my Questy is to be happier and be better to the people that I love.
That's
and
a
try
good
to be
questy.
Less selfish.
I love that.
That's a great Questy.
And who's your bestie?
I guess my bestie is Henry Carter. He's been my best friend since like eighth grade. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, so,
nice. What's a fun story about Henry Carter?
We both lived in New York for forever. I moved there first and he moved there shortly after, but we were both there for like a decade. And we were on the train and someone had like dumped this bag of Doritos on the ground and we were just sitting talking and I was like, how much for you to eat one of those Doritos off the ground? He's like $20. I was like, I'll give you $20 to eat the Dorito. And like we were just joking around, he wasn't that, and he like gets up and goes towards the Dorito and this woman who we didn't realize was listening to us the whole time goes, no boy, don't eat the Dorito. And we laughed so hard. I was like, he wasn't gonna eat it, we were just joking, like.
John, thanks so much for coming
to
the pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, this
is really
fun. It's
so good to see you.
It's awesome to just talk to people with or without microphones. We didn't have to do this contrivance. Could have hung out.
Yeah, you could have just called when we got dinner. Well, thank you
for
coming.
Yeah, cool. It's professional. Yeah, cool. All right.
It's really good to see you.
Yeah,
thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Bye. All right, that's another episode of Mythic Questy Besties. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We hope you liked it, and we'll see you again soon.
See you later.
Bye. Bye.